Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller, and this is NPR News. This hour, if you don't have money for college, how far can grit really take you? That's the question educator and writer Linda Nathan investigated, and what she found were a lot of barriers that were resistant to even the most resilient and gritty kids if they didn't have the means for higher education. Nathan writes in a chapter called Just Work Harder, grit is not the holy grail that it's been cracked up to be, and it certainly isn't the cure-all it has been portrayed as in so much education literature. As Linda Nathan joins us, I'd like to hear from you this morning. If you struggled to get to and stay in college, whether you're at a two-year or a four-year institution, what were the greatest obstacles that you faced in working for that degree? And if you're an educator, have you been rethinking this focus on grit and resilience? So I want to hear from you. If you're in college, just out of it, you had to overcome a number of obstacles to get there. Where did grit figure into that? Where did this idea of character figure into that? And as educators, I want to know if you're rethinking this focus, this holy grail, as Linda puts it, of on grit and resilience. Here's the number, 800-242-2828. 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Linda Nathan is the executive director of the Center for Artistry and Scholarship and a former headmaster of a public high school for visual and performing arts in Boston. And her new book is titled When Grit Isn't Enough. And she's with us from Boston. And Linda, welcome. It's really good to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Carrie. I really appreciate it.
I'm going to guess here that listeners just heard your background in education and arts and the center that you run and think, well, what does she really know about the demands of grinding it out every day in an urban high school? She had talented kids who were motivated to learn. Mm-hmm. I've read the book. I know you really understand this. What would you say about how your background informs your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I was a public school educator for about 40 years. I began in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and then the Boston Public Schools, where I was a middle school teacher, and then the co-director of Fenway High School, an urban high school in Boston, and then the founding headmaster of Boston Arts Academy. And one of the things that I did when I stepped down from leading the school was the headmaster who had taken over from me, Ann Clark, asked me just to begin talking to alums and to understand their experiences in college. And that turned into the book. I didn't know I was going to write a book, but I interviewed formally probably 80 students and talked informally to dozens more. And, you know, I thought in the middle of that project, well, maybe I should talk to kids who didn't go to a school like the Boston Arts Academy. But it turns out that the experiences that my students had, I think, are very, very common. And I really appreciated your opening to your listeners to call in and share their experiences. And as you know, the book is divided into these five chapters that I really interrogate as myths that I don't think support our country anymore. And they are: money doesn't have to be an obstacle, race doesn't matter, just work harder, there is a college for everyone, everyone can go to college, if you believe in yourself, your dreams will come true. And when you hear those, put air quotes around them, because those were really the assumptions that my alums talked about in very detailed terms. And I think that if we're ever going to do better for our democracy, we really have to take on those myths, interrogate them deeply, and begin to think about solutions.
As I read the book, I thought, I began to understand why this was such an attractive idea. I mean, I had Paul Tough on the show, and I'll play you an excerpt from that in just a couple minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I understand this. I think that this is what we want to believe, right? We know mm-hmm. there are inequities, and we know they are right. stubborn and hard to overcome. Right. And this gave us fulfillment to think,
that's right.
but there is a
if
way.
If we just can
Go ahead.
Say... You know, I mean, I think you said it beautifully. We want to believe that just by being gritty, by being persistent, tenacious, you're going to make it. And, of course, the opposite is Not true. If you're not persistent, tenacious, and gritty, you won't make it. That's a prerequisite. But this kind of grit philosophy that had so entered the education pedagogy, particularly in what I call no-excuses schools, this has really done damage to our young people. This is doing damage to particularly Black and brown young people, first-gen young people. This kind of rigid, it turned into a rigid behavioral kind of adherence to something that harkens back to the 1950s. And I describe some of that in the chapter you were referencing, Just Work Harder, you know, the idea that there can be 83 infractions in a class. I mean, imagine that. The idea that, you know, you have to stand in a corner with a T-shirt over your uniform if you forgot to tuck in your shirt for a minute. And that these kinds of techniques are going to help kids get to college? I don't think so.
Call here from Alita in Moorhead, Minnesota. Hi, Alita. Really glad you had a chance to call.
Hello.
Yeah, what's your story on this?
Well, you know, I'm a mother of four, and it was a tough decision to pursue a higher education, just because for someone as a mom, you know, a single mom raising kids, it's a big risk you take on. It's a lot of debt you take on, which, you know, I think the country is changing, and there a lot of people see college as a way to get ahead, but aren't sure that it's worth the risk. And there's been times, you know, where money's been so tight in my family that we've had to go to the food shelf. We had to be subsidized through the government through programs like SNAP. And without, you know, daycare assistance, none of this would be possible. And I just think that there are ways for, you know, people like me to go to college. It's just, you know, searching for those resources and finding that extra hand up.
Alita, I'm just curious about where you are at the moment in the pursuit of your degree.
I'm a senior at Moorhead State.
Way to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. Thanks so much.
Studying sociology.
Thank you very much for the call. Linda, I mean, character, grit, she has to have
right?
that.
She has it all. She has it all.
And yet.
So, you know, she's what we believe in. And interestingly, though, yesterday in the Boston Globe, there was an article that came out, Debt Load Hits Black Students Hardest. And this was research by the U.S. Department of Education, analyzed by the Center for American Progress. It talked about African-American students who started college in 2003 typically owed 113% of their student loan 12 years later. White students owed 65% of the original amount, and Hispanic borrowers knocked down their debt to 83%.
Oh,
so
man.
This
wow.
issue of debt and student loans is very, very serious. And, you know, the article really, like my book, talked about what kind of implicit promises are we making to our young people and to our people like the caller who wants to go to college so she can get ahead. Risk worth it?
Yeah, I want our listeners to know that you're not saying that grit and resilience are unimportant, but you
no.
say in the book, it's not that grit is unimportant, it's just not sufficient.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think what the caller was referencing is how important it is to have systemic supports for folks going to college, for money to go to college. I mean, the chapter on money, you know, it sort of took my breath away. It shouldn't have, but it took my breath away listening to my alums, given my own experiences with my own three middle-class white children, my own biological children who went to college and had lots of family support. And we just, as a nation, we are not doing enough for first-gen kids, for Black and brown kids, for poor kids. And we must.
Linda,
we must do more.
Linda Nathan is with us, and we're talking about her book, When Grit Isn't Enough. She's a former high school principal, now executive director of the Center for Artistry and Scholarship. And she's examining how public and private education.
And private.
Right. Took on this idea that it was all about grit and resilience. This was really trendy in a lot of education circles. And
right.
She's talking to us about examining that, interrogating that, as she says. And I want to hear from you as an educator. Have you been rethinking the focus on grit and resilience? And how about if you've struggled to go to or stay in college, whether you're at community college level, four-year institution, you're out of school, you're looking back and saying, that was extremely difficult, and it wasn't only about character. I'd like to hear about your experience. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. To Teresa, listening in Chester, Iowa. Teresa, what's your story? Thanks for calling.
Well, I didn't have any family support as I aged out of the foster care system with no money to my name and nothing. And I went to college and I was able to graduate, but I agree, grit and resilience is not everything. I had to really focus on my education so I could take full advantage of scholarships and stuff that was out there. And I was able to graduate with no student debt at all because I didn't need to take out any loans.
That's terrific.
It was extremely difficult navigating being an adult without any support, as well as navigating the financial system and trying to keep everything together.
Yeah. Well, Teresa, thanks. One of the things I talk about in the book is the need for success offices, financial aid offices, all these offices that exist on various campuses to really come together to support students like you, because I think there's very little understanding of the emotional toll it's taking on students like you. So I congratulate you, and I appreciate you sharing your story with us.
I wanted to play a little bit of one of the several interviews that I did with Paul Tough, who wrote this book that was widely read about education and grit and resilience. And this is an excerpt where he's talking about observing students in a New York City school where there is high academic achievement. Let's listen.
And the headmaster there talked a lot about failure, about especially for kids who are in high-achieving academic environments, that one of the things they're lacking is real challenge, that and that character strengths like grit and self-control are developed through failure, through really having the opportunity to fail. And a lot of kids in those communities don't get a chance to really fail.
Listening back to that, I found that interesting. I get that.
Yeah, because I agree with him.
That's right. For some students, right? That's really necessary.
Yeah. No, I think this notion of failure, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I believe so deeply in immersive arts education, because in artistic enterprises, we fail a lot to get our work put out there. But the way the sort of grit philosophy has been incorporated actually doesn't support failure, because it's very regimented. It's very, very much about sort of doing what the teacher says at the pace that the teacher suggests. And I didn't see a whole lot of acceptance of mistake making, which I think is really critical to learning.
Does that come from the teacher's culture? Does it come from parental culture?
I think it comes from a school culture that believes in differentiation in terms of learning, that believes that kids learn at different paces in different ways, that this notion of lockstep is not particularly conducive to deep understanding. I think, you know, if you really believe in failure, it means you understand something about how people learn, because people do learn more through making mistakes than, you know, through doing everything correctly, because that's really part of the learning process. So I don't disagree with him on that take. And it wasn't that I was ever trying to disagree with him. I'm really trying to say that where we've taken this no excuses grit pedagogy has got to stop. It's because it's a way of discounting what the previous caller talked about, the difficulties that we go through because of, you know, we came to a place in our society with the no excuses schools where you're not allowed to make excuses for poverty, for mental illness, for health issues, for any of it. You just have to be gritty. And I don't think I don't want to work in schools that don't take into account the whole child and the whole family.
You know, what you've just said about these no-excuses schools, I don't know if you've had a chance to read Lenora Chu's new book, Little Soldiers.
I'll look at that.
She's a journalist based in China, and so her eldest child is in this very exclusive, about no-excuses kindergarten, and she starts to learn what the Chinese education system is like and what they think of American schools, right. I mean,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's so rigid and so disciplined. And as you looked at some of these no excuses schools, you came away wondering, well, what kinds of messages are we really giving to our students about about this from that?
Right, because I think that we're really saying that if you come from a certain race or culture or socioeconomic background, you just have to snap to it. And begin to assume the behaviors, if you will, of the dominant culture. And I saw too many schools that were primarily black and brown with almost 100% white teachers. And I think we have to look at, we have to examine what that looks like. You know, what does that mean white women doing to black and brown bodies? And is this the best we can do in our schools? And I came away resoundingly with the answer to that question as no.
John tweets here, I taught at LSU and now at UMN, University of Minnesota, and I really hope the discussion on grit doesn't become a code word for pulling yourself up by your bootstraps.
There you go.
Grit is necessary, not always sufficient for success in college and life. Linda, what do you want to add to that?
No, that's exactly why I wrote the book, because I think grit has become code for pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And that's what I was referencing earlier, because it's a way to distance ourselves from taking on systemic racism. We live in a racist society. And if we don't teach our students that, and if we're not explicit about that, we are doing them a disservice. We need to name it. We need to teach it. We need to describe it. And too much of this no excuses stuff is a way of saying, I'm not going to deal with poverty. I'm not going to deal with racism. And in a way, it's given a pass to too many people.
Call here from Craig in St. Paul. Hey, Craig, thanks so much for waiting.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, what are you thinking about?
Yeah, well, I called in because of a struggle that I think a lot of people deal with that doesn't get a lot of attention. So I go to the oldest higher educational institution in Minnesota, Hamline University. Mm-hmm. And I love it here, but there is a policy that I feel discriminates against poor students. If you owe more than $1,000 on your student account, you can't withdraw from a course, change your schedule 2 weeks into the semester, or register for next term courses. So as a senior with a, you know, I, not to praise myself, but a great GPA, you know, I'm above 3.5, I might not be able to come back for my last semester of my senior year until I work off that $1,000. And when you think of the price of, you know, university education, $1,000 really seems like chump change. But it is a barrier for an independent student with no ability to get a private student loan. And yeah, I think there needs to be a lot of discussion that happens in the book Pedagogy of the Oppressed, where we need to stand up and free our oppressors by getting rid of these oppressive policies.
What do you think, Linda?
I couldn't agree with you more. And in the first chapter in the book, I write about some of my suggestions for colleges. This is in colleges' control to change these policies. And so what the caller just described, I've heard so many stories like this of you miss one email to waive your health insurance and you can't get housing and you can't register for classes. If you have to drop out of school after 2 years because of loan issues and financial aid issues, you can never get your transcripts back for the courses you've taken and paid for. So what the caller is talking about is so true and so solvable.
Gabriel called from Collegeville. He says, I'm in college at St. John's and I'm in the military. I've been going through ROTC and that takes an exceptional amount of grit. Also, my brother went to trade school. there's opportunity there, he pays less than $20,000. Mm-hmm. Linda, this is a good moment to talk about some of the answers to this that you've got in the back of the book. And I was intrigued by your call for a service year for all Americans. And it's not, we're not talking about you have to go into the military, but what's your spin on this?
Well, I have thought a lot about this idea of, you know, it seems pretty accepted that people go into the military. Some kids do, you know, AmeriCorps kind of years with City Term or other organizations. But I really think it would be a fabulous idea for all Americans after graduating from high school, before college, to not necessarily do the military, but to have a service year. I think it would help us really understand what we want to do in our lives and not use college to grow up and to figure it all out, but to really spend a year thinking about other people and thinking about our communities, working as apprentices or working in a community. So I would love to have the new call be a service year for all Americans. I think it would be really a wonderful new policy. Like, you know, Kennedy gave us the Peace Corps, but this could be something different that we all would benefit from, because I appreciate what the caller mentions about trade school. I call it career and vocational education. And I think we need much more of that in our high schools. Our curriculums, because of high-stakes testing, have become very, very narrow these days. And we don't have enough opportunity for kids in high school to really learn what they're passionate about. So a service year between high school and college or between high school and work could be the opportunity to learn what we're passionate about.
And so, just so I understand this, I mean, does this address the cost of higher education or?
Well, it could be. I mean, that's an interesting idea. It could be that, you know, a lot of colleges are now saying we don't need to be 4 years. We could be 3 years. It could be that by doing a service year, maybe even some of those that year could convert to credits in college. That's possible. I hadn't sort of thought about it that way. I think the cost of college has just become out of control, and we really need to bring that back to the center. I mean, it's I don't believe any college education is worth the $70,000 that some private colleges are charging now.
Linda, what's your take on how we got to this? I mean, I know that, and this happened in Minnesota, state funding has been withdrawn from a lot of public universities. But what else is happening that tuition is rising the way it is?
Well, I think, I mean, this may be too simplistic, but I think somewhere along the line, we decided that, you know, fancy gyms and fancy dining halls were and buildings were as important as a really good education. And so a lot of the colleges, you know, just kept competing with one another and building and building and building. And then, of course, costs went up, because certainly it's not, you know, the professors that are making all this money, because so many of the colleges now are basing a lot of what they provide on adjuncts, which is a much cheaper way, of course, of providing an education. So, you know, I'm not a higher ed expert, and I don't pretend to be, and the book isn't about higher ed as much as it is about a way of critiquing the experiences that students have had in higher ed and asking, you know, for some ideas, suggesting some ideas of ways we can bring things together. And I do think that this idea of debt forgiveness, of releasing transcripts for credits already paid for, these are things that could make it more affordable for kids and, more importantly, allow more students to graduate from college.
If you've just gotten in on the discussion, Linda Nathan is with us. She's a former educator and the author of a new book called When Grit Isn't Enough. And as she says, she took on this idea of grit and resilience as being the answer to success in public education and in private education, and as noted, interrogated that and wrote a book about what she learned about what it means to succeed in K-12 and then aspire to go on to college, and a lot of the obstacles that are presented to kids that come from maybe a family where nobody has been to college before, or a family where there's a low-income situation. And that's what we're talking about, and I'm asking for your thoughts on this. To the phones to Jacob in Minneapolis. Hey, Jacob, hi.
Hi there. Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you guys talking about this. And actually, I'm a senior at the University of Minnesota. My first 2 years of college, I was doing community college courses, mostly online. Mm-hmm. I was working full-time at the same time. And up until this past summer, I'd been working full-time and going to school full-time in order to pay for my education. I'm going to graduate in May with an economics degree, and it's I'll be graduating with about $30,000 worth of student debt.
Yeah.
I've never received a scholarship, honestly, never privately or from schools. I've applied to dozens and dozens of scholarships, but I've never received one. So my tuition is being paid through student loans and myself.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And of course, that takes, I think, a lot of, and Linda would say this, grit and resilience, Jacob. Good work. But yeah, you had to overcome some obstacles that that others did not. And these are kind of the inequities that are embedded in American education that I think, Linda, you were saying, are not acknowledged often when we focus too much on grit.
Right. And you know, sadly, $30,000 of debt is not considered too much these days, if you can imagine. I'm sure the caller doesn't agree with that.
That really floors me.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And the caller may understand, as an economics major, why our universities and college tuitions have gone up so much.
What have you, as noted at the beginning of the conversation, you interviewed a lot of students, which I found these profiles really enlightening. As you follow these students beyond education, and they're graduating with a lot of debt and some of the other mm-hmm. things that they've had to overcome, what do you find about their success rates?
Well, you know, interestingly, our success rates from the Boston Arts Academy are phenomenally high. And so, you know, folks were like, why are you writing a book about success? You know, we're at about 68% kids graduating between 4 and 6 years, which is well above the national averages. So I'm enormously proud of the success of the Boston Arts Academy and of our alums in college. And I really wanted to understand what was happening to the third that weren't going to college or weren't finishing. And then, like an earlier caller said, what was happening to the kids who were in college? And how were they experiencing racism? And how were they experiencing college life? And this is, you know, both white kids and kids of color. So, as I said, our success is admirable. But I don't think we can rest on our laurels. I think we have to do better.
Call here from Sarah in Minneapolis. Hi, Sarah. You're a teacher. Is that right?
I am. I'm a sixth grade teacher in a first-tier suburb here in the Twin Cities. And my building is close to 80% free and reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. And I had quick comments about the notion of grit, because I feel like it's a buzz topic right now. Mm-hmm. Feels kind of like a trendy term that's coming and it's going to go. And teachers are often bombarded with lots of different messages as to how they should run their classrooms. And this is the one that we're hearing right now. And yet we know our students have so many obstacles. Most of my students are not white. I am white. And we do a lot to help our kids get through, but we know we can't just say to them, you need grit. So that was one comment. And then the other message that we get often from administration is that we need to run our classrooms in a really rigid manner, kind of a military-style manner, have no strays from that norm. And yet then there's concepts like the concept of, can't think of the term right now, but letting kids sit wherever they want around the room and taking desks away. Right. And it's like, what do we do? You know, where do we go with this? There's so many different things being thrown at us. So that's it. I'll listen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Linda, what would you say?
No, I thank you for that. I mean, I describe in the chapter we've been talking about sort of a no excuses pedagogy, and then another school that I describe in New York City, same population, you know, where kids are allowed to sit on desks, they don't have to sit rigidly, you know, in their chairs, And from my observations, the learning in that more relaxed school was just as high, if not higher, as in what the caller called the militaristic kinds of schools. I think, again, we have to interrogate these sort of this grit philosophy in racial terms, because as the caller identified, she's white and most of her kids are not, I'm assuming. And I don't think these are healthy ways to increase learning.
Linda, this has really been great. Thanks so much for your insight. I really enjoyed reading the book, and good to have you explain some of your ideas here today.
Thanks so much for having me on the air. I really appreciate it.
Linda Nathan's book is called When Grit Isn't Enough, A High School Principal Examines How Poverty and Inequality Thwart the College for All Promise.